We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Haw, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Albert Almora Jr., for his career, is hitting .280 with the bases loaded, 17 RBIs. He has never hit a grand slam. Here's the pitch by Irvin. Almora swings. Hits one to deep left field. Way back. You can look up. Gone! A grand slam for Albert Almora Jr. Cubs lead, 7-3.
Charlie bashes this ball. Deep right field. It is a grand slam, Charlie Tilson. Start the party at New Trier. 8-3 Sox. To third, Moncada on the bag. To second for two. It is a triple play. You never know what you're going to see in the game of baseball. Around the horn, see you, Houston.
Two on, two out. A 3-2 count on the batter nap. Here comes the pitch. Ground ball snagged by Cishek. Underhand toss to Rizzo. Fly the W. Cubs win again. They beat Philadelphia 8-4. Magnifico!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
A lot of highlights.
Yeah, it's fun.
Fun night. When you have two grand slams and a triple play, that's a good night in baseball in Chicago.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's a special night for both those players. First grand slams in Major League Baseball, and for Charlie Tilson, first home run, along with first grand slam. And the Sox also pulled a triple play in that game.
And Eloy with the brace.
Eloy had a
with
brace.
Two homers, not one, but two. How about that?
And Abreu, who's their best player, hits a home run as well. And it's funny because, you know, we talk about Almora and Tilson both getting a home run. And Kevin said, made a comment that both those guys are probably best suited as a fourth outfielder in an ideal situation. And immediately you get a phone call arguing about a couple texts, arguing that, you know, you can't compare the two guys. I don't think he was trying to compare the two guys, but it occurs to me, if we did compare the Cubs and the White Sox, would there be anybody that you would want on the White Sox for the Cubs? Probably their closer. Maybe that's the only position.
Yeah, you would. You'd figure out a way to use Eloy.
Okay.
Yeah,
would you?
Would you?
Where would you put
definitely
Eloy?
Definitely would, at left field.
Okay.
Yeah, I think right now.
Over Schwarber?
You might
would rather have
them.
Eloy than Kyle Schwarber?
I think.
Your leadoff hitter?
If you're building a team and you're looking at Eloy Jimenez as a potential outfielder, yeah. There's a lot to like there.
You don't want Moncada.
You can't have this conversation
Anderson.
Without insulting somebody.
I'm not trying to insult anyone. I'm merely saying that not only did we not make that comparison and as if they were interchangeable and you should trade one for the other.
Yeah.
But when you really get down to it, it's very hard to find people that
it
you
is.
Would trade
no,
one
no
for
question
the other.
About it. It's natural to put them in the same sentence this morning because both hit grand slams last night.
Yes.
So I understand why Kevin did that, and I understand why both center fielders, both guys who have speed, both have upside, and maybe, ideally, on good teams, they're both fourth outfielders. I think Albert Almora can play and has played a bigger role on the Cubs than Charlie Tilson could for the White Sox.
Yes.
Goes
I don't think anyone would argue that. Yeah. But it's interesting how people would twist what the point was. It happens all the time. Yeah, but I'm trying to think.
Can't surprise you.
Is there any close argument that you could confuse for an insult to a player? You know what I'm saying? I don't think Abreu over Rizzo. I don't think anyone would say that.
I'll tell you, they take Moncada over Addison Russell. If you're talking about an infielder
But we're not. Mankata would be over Bodie or something, right? Because it wouldn't be Bryant. It wouldn't be.
You're not taking Mankata over Bryant.
No, of course not. Nor Tim Anderson over Javi Baez.
No.
Nor. I'm just saying, if you line it up with your best player, not the guy that.
But if you line it up with the players that you're picking from a pool of, and Yoan Moncada is sitting there, and you were looking for a second baseman on your all-Chicago team full of talent, I would put Yoan Moncada at second base.
Ahead of Addison Russell?
Absolutely. Every day.
Okay.
All day,
Even though he now plays third and he didn't play a great second base?
Yes.
What about Yomer?
What about Yomer?
He turned the triple play yesterday.
He's a great guy to have in the clubhouse.
I'm just trying to gauge how much you dislike Addison Russell.
See, so unfair.
I know it is. But this is what I'm gauging.
It has nothing to do with like or dislike of Addison Russell. When you're looking at the projected ceilings of each player, and I'm saying Yoan Moncada or Addison Russell, there's no contest. None. Before you even factor in personality or domestic abuse, violence in the past or whatever. Anything when just a baseball discussion, this isn't 2016. Okay, it's Yoan Moncada.
You think Moncada is a better baseball player than Addison Russell?
Yes, I do. Is that a crazy thought?
Not crazy. I just don't know that I agree with it.
You don't agree with that?
I don't know that I do. I would have to spend more. I don't want to knee jerk a response
like you just got out of
get
me
into it get it okay I want you to knee jerk
like
a response
go to me in the making
but no very, I think, no I just need to think that through a little bit.
I understand why
I need to take a look at a couple things,
but in fairness and in objectively, when you take a step back, I think when you look at the ceilings for each respective player, Addison Russell has really he meant a lot to the Cubs in 2016. He's had two very difficult seasons for a lot of different reasons.
Doesn't mean a lot to him now.
Yoan Moncada is a player that has, when he came to the White Sox, superstar potential. Now, has he changed those expectations slightly? But I still think you see glimpses of that.
Okay, but by the measurement you're making, which is if you're building a team and moving forward, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of the way you're looking at it. So how do you look at some of the young pitchers on the White Sox, particularly Lucas Giolito, and what looks like, and we'll find out a lot more today, but he's put together a couple of good starts. You wouldn't want him on your rotation on the north side, even though there is this whole idea that Baseball Prospectus said they're not going to be good this year because they got so much age in the pitching.
Not if you're trying to win now.
Right.
I mean, unless you're getting Lucas Giolito in the second half the way he's pitched in the first half so far, then it's a different discussion. But I don't think there's any room for Lucas Giolito.
No. Is there for Dylan Cease? Is there for Michael Kopech? Is there for Rodon if he's not
Cubs hurt? Cubs are built to win now.
Contracts aside, though, you wouldn't take Lucas Giolito over Yu Darvish, the two seasons that those two guys are having, respectively? I mean, up to this point?
Probably not, Kevin, because I think the questions about each guy are similar. You don't know how long they can sustain success. And given Yu Darvish's track record, I have more to look at. He has achieved success in the major leagues over a level that has you know, brought him, what, a $126 million contract. Lucas Giolito's not there yet.
But he's like, Darvish has kind of thrown his arm off in Japan, followed by his career. If you just look at the number of starts and pitches thrown and all that
surgeries.
Stuff. Surgery.
But the question is
about guys have had surgery, though.
What rotation would you want to win now?
Oh, well, it's Darvish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if that's the question, it's easy to answer.
But I'm just saying that when you were measuring the other answer, you were saying you were looking toward the future. And
I'd say now or later. I'd take a Moncada over Russell all day, every day.
All right.
And that has nothing to do with any sort of perceived bias you think that I have against Addison Russell.
Did I suggest that at all?
Yes, you did. I don't think you suggested it at all. I think you stated it.
I think you're overreacting.
I think you stated
it. It was a fair consideration, and I think you're overreacting. But that's what you do.
I overreact?
No, you don't.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Occasionally, look, everyone's prone to overreaction and overstatement, but I do like what I've seen out of Yoan Moncada. I believe he's taken advantage of the confidence the Sox placed in him and putting him at third base.
And I'm not arguing that at all, but I know he's still a very young player, but so is Addison Russell. He's still a very young guy, and if he really has turned his life around and has kind of recommitted himself to the game and all that stuff, I think that a hot streak could be coming up for him, and we could be looking at him differently. Moncada's 23, and and Russell's 25. And Russell has accomplished more in his career, obviously, to this point. But as you say, it's a couple of years ago, and there's been a lot that's happened since then that makes you wonder if he could ever sort of recapture that. But, you know, guys,
I'm surprised, frankly, at your continued confidence in the redemptive story that is Addison Russell's.
You know, I don't know that I believe in his redemption as a human.
Well, if you don't believe in his redemption as a human, then I don't know how you're placing so much faith in his redemption as a ball player or as a Cub, because I think they're related. And
that's interesting.
And I think that without one, you don't have the other. So
I do think, though, David, you know, we saw the video of the Cubs out partying after the Washington game, right? And mm-hmm. they'd lost that game, I believe, right? But anyway, they're out, and you see, you know, Schwarber, and you see Rizzo, and you see who else? There are like two other guys. Lester. It was Elmore there,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, I think he was there, too.
Okay. Had Addison Russell been a part of that, wouldn't we have had a completely different conversation because of the issues that he's had and all the things that have occurred?
Well, he doesn't have the same sort of latitude or trust that those guys have. You don't believe that Addison Russell should be out at 4 a.m. in Washington, D.C.
No, but it's okay for the rest of them.
Yeah, because those guys haven't violated your trust. That you can, you have more faith in their ability to be a professional.
So if Russell can stay out of those situations to begin with,
if he can get his personal life in order, the suggestion that he can be a better professional. I think that's why I'm saying they're related.
But
and I think that's what the Cubs have been telling you, if for people that have heard Theo Epstein be consistent about this, is that they're trying to create this foundation from a personal behavior standpoint where Addison Russell has that stability, because they believe once he has that,
yes,
the rest will come.
Follow.
And when the rest follows, he can be an all-star shortstop again.
So there's a causality between his play on the field and his nightlife, love of the nightlife, the issues he had with domestic abuse. That there's a causality. That's why his play dropped off.
Well, my sense is that and I think everyone's sort of perception is that Addison Russell's letting some things lapse in his personal life or having a more lax approach to it affected his play. And whether it was distractions, whether it was being fully prepared on a daily basis.
I think you're right.
These kind of things got in the way.
I think that's the conclusion they reached. 312-644-6767, Johnson, Payless, Hills. Good morning, John.
Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, guys. Just listening to your discussion here, I can't classify myself. I think I have a good perspective because I'm not either Cubs or Sox fan, but it seems like it's like apples and oranges here. A lot of these players I'm looking at when I watch the Cubs, I think they've seen what they can do, and basically their ceilings have been reached. And then you see these guys that are younger on the Sox, on the South side, and it seems like they have so much potential that hasn't been reached yet, where we can't really say this player is this good yet. Like Moncada, he made a huge step from last year to this year, and he could do that again next year.
Right.
And we don't even know yet. But when we're looking at Addison Russell, when you're talking about him, all the studies that have been shown about people who do this kind of thing with domestic abuse, this could take him 5 years to conquer this. I mean, this is something that's not going to happen in 1 year. 1 year, if he could do this in 1 year, that's the equivalent of flipping a light switch. That just doesn't happen. So his play also will be affected, obviously, by his things that are going on off the field.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Appreciate
stuff.
It. Yeah.
Thank you, John. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
What happens if Russell Addison makes that play?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Wow, that is interesting to hear. Again, A-Rod would have gotten his name right a couple of years ago.
What happens if Russell Addison makes that play?
Well, you're talking about a player that in 2016 and in 2015 when he came, you know, when he emerged, a couple people mentioned him as a potential MVP candidate one day. And he was an all-star caliber shortstop, and he's still there, and he still could become that player going through a difficult time. But when you compared him to Yoan Moncada, that's where, you know, I think that there's just more upside with Moncada.
312-644-6767. Let's try William. He's on the south side. Hi, William.
Morning, William.
Hey, Molly. How are you doing this morning?
Good, buddy.
Well, what I think about Addison Russell is I think he's gone for trade for pitching this year. And I also think Schwarber's gone for pitching once they build up their averages.
I don't know that I agree with you about Schwarber.
I don't see them dealing Schwarber.
I think that, you know.
I think Schwarber is a guy that they have probably had opportunities to trade. Maybe they will reconsider in the offseason, depending on how the rest of this one goes. But I can't see them dealing Kyle Schwarber in the middle of the season. Addison Russell, different discussion. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know that they're playing him now because they're trying to increase his trade value. They're playing him now because they think that, number one, he's a better option than Daniel Descalso in some days. Daniel Descalso really has been struggling since May 1st. And number two, Ben Zobrist isn't here. And when you have those two things happening, you're looking for some opportunities for other people to take advantage of, and Addison Russell's one of those guys.
Let's try Jeff. He's on the road. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah. Hey, good morning. Talking about Addison Russell, I think the way you describe what he did and what he is now trying to rebuild his life from is really important. And when you say things like he had a lapse in his personal life to describe a man who was a serial abuser who choked his wife, punched his wife, tackled her on the street, it is such a passive voice and such a really disrespectful way toward women to describe what he did.
I said personal lapse. I also described that he had domestic abuse in his past. I said both, Jeff. You're cherry picking here. I don't think anybody has been has spoken about Addison Russell in a way that suggests we're taking lightly what he was accused of doing, what he was found guilty of doing. So,
well, I'm telling you as a listener that is absolutely the way it came across.
Okay. Well, I appreciate where you're coming from.
I don't think it was intended that way.
Well, the intent's irrelevant. I think you have to be careful about, he's right about how you speak about it, but I think if he's being fair, you know, there's been no suggestion that Addison Russell, we're not minimizing domestic violence to a personal lapse in judgment.
No.
So.
It's frustrating because I think that you feel as strongly as I do about that subject. I know Dustin feels very strongly about it. Kevin, you've talked about not wanting him traded. I don't think there's anybody here that that doesn't take that very seriously and isn't affected in terms of their opinion of the guy.
And especially like in the business that we're in, we hear things a little more than, you know, the listeners generally. And
in the context of what he's referring to, we went back and we were talking about how Addison Russell began the descent. And I don't know exactly when what he was accused of doing to his ex-wife happened, but I do know from being around the team that when the descent began, he was making poor judgments and he was having lapses in personal judgment in terms of how he behaved around the team, whether it's being out too late, you heard things. And that was the context of that conversation. But Jeff, you know, he heard us be, you know, he suggested it was taken lightly.
Well, don't include me. He heard you.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, all right. Check me out.
He heard
man.
Me.
Yeah. No, but I think it's unfair for him to kind of cherry pick that comment because it was more about the question was if Addison Russell had been out at the bar with the rest of those guys, how would we have responded to it?
Right.
And then
right.
you get into what the issues were in terms of his penchant for partying on the road and going out and all those other things. And that was not a conversation necessarily about the spousal abuse issues, which are unforgivable. I just think context matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think it's kind of, you know, we get this all the time, this kind of weird
stuff. Addison Russell would not be in a Cub uniform.
Right. And I think what's interesting or what's difficult about the situation is that they have made him, Major League Baseball has punished him and then allowed him to return. So he is an asset that the Cubs have that they could have chosen to not bring back. And it's very rare that a team does bring back someone with the issues that he has in terms of spousal abuse, but they've chosen to do it, and they say in part that they've chosen to do it because they've had him since a young age. He's a young guy. They want to help him be the kind of person that they think he can be. And they claim that they're doing this for him mm-hmm. as much as anything else, which is a very interesting tack to take, because it's very easy to look at that with suspicion and say that, oh, well, it's easy. You know, look, they're protecting an asset. That's all they're doing. I think there's more to it than that. But I understand, you know, if he is just trade bait, if you have just brought him back, he had no value effectively.
Right.
All you could do is just cast him asunder, and someone would have then picked him up and done this. So maybe now you can use him in a way to help your team. And if you do that, does that underscore that it really was all about trade bait?
Maybe,
you know,
so.
It's tricky. It's tricky for them.
Since bringing him back, he's hitting .226. He was 0-for-4 last night. The Cubs won anyway, because they had three home runs, and they're playing the Phillies again today. Big matchup out of Wrigley Field at 120. John Lester, Aaron Nola. That is going to be
for a pitching
that's
matchup.
A pretty good one, pitching matchup. Kevin.
And I understand the caller, you know, I'm sure his intentions were fine, but I think you guys have been as tough and as fair on anybody or on Addison Russell as anybody. So I do think that was a little cherry picky from the caller.
Cubs win. Gordon Wittenmeyer taking you inside the Cubs clubhouse. Cubs win.
Chicago Cubs.
The Chicago Sun-Times. Gordon Wittenmeyer.
Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are going to win
tonight. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Gordon Wittenmeyer joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. And Gordon, of course, working for the Chicago Sun-Times, the only paper in town that covers the White Sox, oddly enough, and he covers the Cubs. Good morning, Gordon. How are you?
Morning, Gordon.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're living the dream, buddy. And it's been fun to watch the way the Cubs are playing and to see, you know, Cole Hamels has an off night, and yet you can turn around and there you got Chatty waiting in the wings, ready to go. And it's kind of reminds you of what they managed to do with that one start by Yu Darvish, that Marshall came in and was better than Darvish, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know how they're doing everything they're doing, but, you know, a team that's blown half its saves this year and has seven different guys that have done it, that they're closing out games, they're walking off, their lineup that was supposedly broke at the end of last year didn't really add much of anybody, and is scoring more than anybody else in the National League. So it's some things have been fixed for sure.
Okay, let's get to that for a second, Gordon. I appreciate everything where you're coming from. You wrote about yesterday the bullpen that is actually that's going to need some reinforcement. But really, did Theo overreact when he called the offense broken last October? When you look at the numbers, 40 games where they scored one or fewer runs.
Bryant was hurt.
But it was broken, yeah. Right? I mean, that's not an overreaction. That was an assessment.
But part of what's fixed the offense is having him back as a MVP candidate.
Absolutely. But do you think it was?
I think that's 100% true. I think when you look at it, it wasn't broke. It was, some of it was what was going on in the game. At large, there was some feast and famine in the game too, but the guys, Chris Bryant, not being able to hit for power, having that shoulder problem, being on the DL for a while, and then even when he was back, not being himself, was huge. He was not a fluke as an MVP that year, and he was actually in 17 probably in many ways better than he was in 16, and didn't win the MVP, and he started off in 18 just as good as he had either of those other 2 years. So when he went the other way, that's a huge bat you're taking out of that lineup. All the rest of the year, even when he was in there. So that's huge, and what that does for everybody else. I mean, just look at the other night, the struggles they had when Javi wasn't in there. That's a big deal. And so that was the biggest part of it. And then the part where he didn't overreact, and the part where he's absolutely on spot on, was the young guys and whether they were going to become what they thought they were going to become. And most of them are kind of as collectively taking at least another half step forward this year. Mm-hmm. So whatever they did in the offseason on that stuff, maybe that's part of it. When I was talking to guys in the clubhouse last night, there was a lot of talk about sort of, well, Hobby talked about learning from each other, and Hamels talked about some of the efforts in the offseason and in the spring about cohesiveness and doing a lot of things together and communicating. So maybe some of those efforts paid off for some of those younger players too.
It's interesting because I think that when we start talking about the Cubs right now, most of the conversation is, you know, is Javi the MVP or is it Chris Bryant? Is, you know, is Rizzo going to lead him in
Wilson
home runs?
Or
is it, exactly. I mean, these are, there's like four names we're throwing around when we're talking about how good they are on a daily basis. And that's not even taken into account. You know, again, Elmora all of a sudden is hitting, which we didn't expect, but he becomes a guy that you got to leave in the lineup.
No question. And a lot of people wanted to leave him there anyway just because of his glove. So now you get the plus glove in center field at a position where that matters more than most. And he's hitting on a regular basis. And he's hitting right-handers better than he had, which I always thought was kind of a goofy reason to leave him out of the lineup anyway. Righties aren't like lefties in that way. But I think that's probably a trickle-down effect from everybody else doing these amazing things ahead of him in the order. He's coming up. Well, last night was a classic example. He came up twice with the bases loaded. And the first time, he grounded out. The second time, hits the grand slam. Both cases hit the ball hard, but he's coming up with situations where they have to come into the strike zone and pitch to him, and he's doing something with it. So again, few guys, that's the difference in, again, go back to Chris Bryant. You know, you got these guys ahead of Elmora doing what they're doing. It creates hitting situations for him. He becomes a better hitter, but that's what a guy or two guys that are that good in a lineup can do for those guys around him.
Gordon, Tyler Chatwood, 2-0 with 1.38 ERA in his last five outings. Mike Montgomery's value speaks for itself, and you see him, you know, being your sixth starter. Chatwood may be your seventh starter. Can you weigh their value to the Cubs in their roles versus their value to potentially trade partners for a reliever?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, first of all, Chatwood still got that contract tied around his neck, so that's part of the deal there. I don't know that you can move that entire contract even with him pitching the way he is. Although, once you get to the trade deadline, you're talking about less than a year and a half on the deal. So the value goes up in that way, too. But then, he's a swing and miss guy for you. You don't have very many of them on the staff. And that bullpen, you know, you've got him and Strope, who's on the DL, and Carl Edwards, who's still struggling to kind of get back to form. And you don't have anybody else out there like that. So his value, if he keeps doing what he's doing, is hard to measure for what this team wants to try to do, if assuming he can keep it up, and that's a big assumption. Do you have enough depth to trade from your starting pitching depth? But that is a scary place to start trading from,
right,
when you're a team trying to win. So
and when you have pitchers that are aging and you don't know what the future looks like, right?
Exactly. So what you can get back, obviously, would be critical. But I just don't think it makes no sense to me to trade productive major league pitching from a staff that's trying to win a championship in order to bring back another pitcher, right?
Well, I agree with you, but I just wonder, we keep talking about this reliever out there that they're going to make a deal for. What are you going to give up to get somebody of quality, of value?
You can give up hitters. You can give up prospects. For whatever that's worth, you know, in their system, I mean, they've got a few guys. They can piece something together. I don't know that. You know, you're probably not going to go find that Chapman type of pitcher that they got in 16, unless you go sign Kimbrel, unless you do something like that. Which I still don't think. I don't see that happening unless. Unless Crane thinks he's really got all that TV money coming in as fast as he does. Well,
I think he thinks that, though, Gordon. Didn't you see that this week? He said
yeah,
the money's on the way. Money coming.
Money's on the way. A whole bunch of money, and he didn't seem to put that in the context of any other factors. Well, we'll see. Maybe he can write Theo a check.
Okay, so we look at this team and we look at the way they're going, and then I forget what this exact stat was. I think it was in the last eight games, the bullpen had a 5.05 ERA. That's going into last night. That you know, it's as much as they're winning and as much as they got five walk-offs and as much as they got a lot of guys contributing, that's still out there. That is still – and it's not just the end of the bullpen, you know. It's you might need a couple moves.
Well, it's the end of the bullpen where you need to make the moves. Because then all of a sudden all these other guys start being fifth, sixth, seventh inning guys as you need them in the middle innings. But now you've got multiple options in the seventh. You can match up better, and all these guys become that much better. So it will – look, you mentioned the ERA. The ERA is indicative to some extent. But to me, what's indicative is the blown saves. Every time you get into these close leads late, cross your fingers. It's white knuckle time. You throw any cliche at it you want. But it's all top step stuff. So, you know, you don't know that you can close games. And it's seven different guys that have blown a save. So it also tells you, I mean, if you didn't already know it, it tells you you don't have a closer. And you don't know that Morrow's coming back. So that's a huge deal, too. If you were supposed to know by May, you're supposed to know by right about now whether you got Morrow back at any strength. And he's just now starting up another throwing progression in Arizona. So that's sometime in July, probably mid-late July at the earliest, if everything goes well with no other setbacks. And then you got to baby him at that point when you bring him back because you don't know what you got, and you have to make sure you don't overuse him. So he can't be classically used even if he comes back. And Strope will be fine. And, you know, after that, there really is no high-end depth anywhere. So you've got to go get back end guys. You got to get somebody that maybe doesn't have to be a full blown closer, but you got to have somebody with some serious swing and miss stuff that can get out right handers and left handers back into that bullpen, and then probably add at least one other arm.
All righty, thank you, Gordon.
Thanks,
we appreciate it, buddy.
Good stuff.
Okay, guys, take it easy.
And,
yep.
And again, maybe you need to jump the market because there's a lot of teams in the same situation.
Well, there are a lot of closers out there to choose from. Although your guy Sean Doolittle gave up a home run last night to Rajay Davis. Do you see that? Rajay Davis takes an Uber from minor league team in Pennsylvania for the Mets, goes up to bat, hits a home run.
And he is my guy, Sean Doolittle, because I'm known for my toe tapping.
You are. You are a toe tapper, and you were singing earlier.
I got a song in my heart.
Mr. Vaudeville McCormick Mulligan.
I got jazz hands. I like to do a little. I'm like,
hey, keep your hands away.
I'm a big Bob Fosse type guy.
You are a bit handsy.
And all that jazz. Help. Oh, Mully and Haw on the score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.